Don't Depend on Daddy is an unfiltered safe space, empowering young professionals to build independence in their 20s and beyond, whether it be personal, professional, or financial. Regardless of your age, relationship status, or job title, the most consistent person in your life is you. So join me and let's build our independence together. Enjoy. Hello and welcome back to Don't Depend on Daddy, the podcast. My name is Michaela. I am your host. And I am so excited for this episode of Don't Depend on Daddy. I sat down with my friend Benny, who is a very experienced traveler, to talk about credit card points and maximizing your travel cards. Benny has traveled all over the world, flying first class and business class, which I personally think is insane, by leveraging his credit card points. He shares his best tips for getting started, how to maximize the value of your points, how to decode an annual fee and decide if it's worth it, how to find the best flights, and so much more. So if you are interested in traveling and getting the most out of your credit cards, I think you'll love this episode. Before we get into it, we're gonna go through our usual housekeeping. I'll do my best to keep it super quick. So first things first, as always, if you wanna get $10 off the personal finance dashboard, you can use the code PODCAST1. That's available to podcast listeners only. Next, if you are still in the process of creating your financial plan for 2024, or you are a new listener, hello. Don't forget to enroll in my free financial planning email course. You can do so via downloading the financial planning checklist, which will always be linked in the show notes. So go check that out. It takes you through the four phases to put together your financial plan for the year or for, you know, at whatever point you're listening to this episode for the rest of the year. If you have not ordered Own Your Money, you totally should. It's a really fantastic finance book, and you will learn practical strategies to budget better, earn more, and reach your six-figure savings goals. If you are a longtime listener of mine and you are looking for all of my information I talk about to be aggregated in one place, Own Your Money is the place for that. And if you're a new listener and you want to get to know me a little bit and you want to see and learn more about all of my favorite financial strategies and tips, Own Your Money is the go-to resource for that. So go check that out. It's available, again, in the show notes. And the last thing is, because I've been looking at some of the reviews, if you haven't reviewed my podcast, please do so. Obviously, I have, you know, been really making an effort to change up the podcast, make it more official, really make it a lot better. I think that all of these episodes so far in 2024 are much higher quality than the episodes from 2023. Not to say those episodes aren't great, but I'm trying to be more succinct, and I think that is coming through. And I can tell based off of the numbers. So if you are enjoying the podcast and you haven't left me a review yet, please go do that. It's very helpful. And if you haven't followed Don't Depend on Daddy on Instagram, you totally should. So you can do that. I share more content beyond just like my break your budget content that's finance and career focused. Don't Depend on Daddy, you're getting podcast content and also more like personal health, wellness, independence content. So go check that out. All of my resources are linked in the show notes. And with that, let's move into our Don't Depend on Daddy moment of the week. So this week, I am sharing another listener response. This one was from a longtime listener of mine who I recognize your name, and I know that we have communicated via DMs and via email. So thank you so much for submitting. I'm not going to say the name, but you know who you are because these are anonymous to the listeners on here. But she submitted, "I'm able to graduate from both my bachelor's and master's degree debt-free. It's crazy to know that I'm part of a small majority that is able to do that. I made the decision to go into a good and affordable college in the middle of nowhere with a plan to get scholarships and work so I didn't have to carry the burden of debt. I finally just got a full-time salary job for my niche position within cybersecurity and I'm able to enjoy my salary. Finding Michaela has been so refreshing to finally find an influencer who I can relate to. So thank you so much for Break Your Budget." I loved this moment of the week because it exemplifies two things. One, making the personal decision to go to a school that not only is a high quality school, but is also affordable and choosing to work so that you are able to pay your way through college. And then the second, this is major, is landing a full-time salary job. So congratulations on the job. As a reminder, the Don't Depend on Daddy moment of the week is an opportunity to share a moment of independence or an exciting win in your life from the week prior. So some weeks I'm going to be sharing my moments of independence. Other weeks I am going to be sharing your moments of independence. There is a form in the show notes where you can submit your Don't Depend on Daddy moment of the week. Oh my gosh, if I could talk. And I will anonymously share them on the podcast every week or almost every week, depending on if I'm sharing mine or a listener. As a reminder, again, this goes without saying, Don't Depend on Daddy is not affiliated with your dad. It has nothing to do with dads, nothing to insinuate along the lines of whether you have a dad or a relationship with a dad or not. Don't interpret it for something that it's not. It's Don't Depend on Everyone, but that just doesn't sound as good. So the Don't Depend on Daddy moment of the week form, like I said, is in the show notes. And with that, let's get into the episode. I am joined today by my dear friend, Benny, and we are going to be talking all about travel rewards, credit cards, and how to travel for less money. So thank you so much, Benny, for coming on to the show. Can you tell us a little bit about yourself?
Yeah, so I was born and raised in Los Angeles, went to USC, and right after I graduated, got my first travel credit card. And over the years, I've built up an array of credit cards and sort of mastered, I don't want to say, mastered is a strong word, but gotten good at the points and miles game and redeeming my points for some pretty amazing travel experiences. So travel is my passion and my hobby, and I love to share it with anybody who wants to listen.
Yeah, I'm so excited for this because if you're listening, a few weeks ago, Benny and I sat down for coffee to like talk about this podcast episode, and I learned so much just in that conversation. So I feel like you guys are all going to learn a ton. So with that, let's talk about you for a moment. I am curious, can you tell us like what your current credit card profile looks like? How did you get started in credit card points? And just a little bit of background on that.
Yeah, so I guess how I got started is just doing my own research and following the points guy. Back when it was a much smaller media page, they taught me everything I know, and just doing research, understanding how credit cards work. You know, you pay them off in full every time you make a purchase. Having that basic understanding, I got my first credit card, like I said, right out of college. And within a year, I'd had enough points between the sign-up bonus and the earnings I'd made through normal healthy spending habits to book myself a trip to Asia in business class. And once I got a taste of that, I understood further how to safely manage multiple credit cards and that it was something that you could do.
Yeah, I think an important thing to note on this whole episode is all of these tips only apply if you're using your credit card responsibly. So that's going to go without saying across the board on everything that we talk about. This is not for irresponsible credit card habits. It's not for carrying a balance on your credit card. If you're not properly paying things off, you're not going to get the same or reap the same benefits from these sort of strategies with travel. So keep that in mind, that this assumes you are paying off your credit cards and not incurring any interest. But I'm very interested in hearing about some of the tips that you have for maybe people who are new to credit cards or travel cards. I get a lot of questions on like, what's the best travel card? But I know that that's a very convoluted question. So how about we start with the tips portion of this by talking about a few tips to like get started with travel cards?
Absolutely. So I think one thing that scares people about travel cards is cards that have a high annual fee. Mm-hmm. We'll get into that more later, I think, but a good starter card should be an annual fee that you are comfortable paying. And most starter cards, like the one I started with and one of the more common ones, the Chase Sapphire Preferred, have a $95 to $100 annual fee. And a lot of them, you can actually get far more value out of the card than that $95. Yeah. So I think understanding what the annual fee is and what you get as a part of that and making sure you can maximize that those benefits is important.
Yeah, what tips would you have for like finding a card? So the common card I think that a lot of people have is the Chase Sapphire Preferred. That's the card that I use predominantly. But do you have tips for people on, let's say, okay, maybe they are a casual traveler at the moment and they have a Chase Sapphire Preferred, but they sort of want to be one of those people that is like you and travels business class to Asia for free? How would you recommend they go about searching for the right card?
Yeah, so I think the biggest thing to understand is your spending habits. Mm-hmm. For most people, rent is their number one expense. Yeah. There are cards out there that allow you to pay rent on them, and we could talk about those later. You can also pay your rent through a credit card, but that incurs fees that essentially increase your rent by, you know, $100 or whatever. But most people, their spending is on food, groceries, gas. So finding a card that earns a good multiplier on those is the most important thing. And then finding a card with a good sign-up bonus, that's how we add up points fast.
Yeah, aligned. Because when I got the Chase Sapphire Preferred, I'm pretty sure the sign-up bonus was 100,000 points at the time that I got it. And I think I had to spend maybe like $4,000 or $5,000 in the span of 3 months. So I actually opened that card right before I moved so that I could put all of my moving expenses and furniture and stuff on that card. So that's another thing to think about is like if you have a big life event coming up, or maybe you are getting married, or you are booking a big trip, or you're moving or something of the sort, opening a card with a high sign-on bonus I think could be really helpful for like getting the most out of those purchases that you are going to make. So the sign-on bonus is key. Also on the topic of cards, I think we should talk about annual fees because annual fees are scary. Mm-hmm. And a $95 annual fee like on the Chase Sapphire is affordable, a little less intimidating. But there are a lot of cards like the Amex cards that have significantly higher annual fees, like $300 plus. And with those cards, obviously there come more benefits. So can we talk about what constitutes making a fee worth it?
Yeah, so let's look at the Amex Platinum because that's pretty much the highest annual fee out there and thought of as, you know, the most premium travel credit card. That has a $695 annual fee, but you can actually get far more than $695 back from the card if you can use the benefits. So just looking at a list of credits it gives you, if you are an Equinox member, you get $300 back a year, which is essentially 1 month of all access. But not everyone obviously goes to a gym that nice. There's a $240 annual digital entertainment credit. So right now I get Hulu and ESPN Plus essentially free through that. $200 hotel credit, which is pretty easy to use. $200 airline fee credit, so check bag fees, seat assignment fees. You get the $200 Uber credit that is doled out in $10 a month and then $35 in December. So, I mean, right there, you've already covered your annual fee without really doing much.
Yeah. I think, too, with annual fees and looking at all of these benefits, really start thinking about what are your spending habits. And if you are going to get this type of card where you reap all of these benefits, do these benefits align with the way that you currently or would like to be spending your money? Because let's say you pay the $600 for the Amex fee or whatever it is. I think it's like $695. Mm-hmm. If you were to pay that, and yes, you get all of these benefits, but are you traveling enough to take advantage of those airline credits? Are you spending enough money on the gym? Do you go to Equinox? Do you use Uber or do you use Uber Eats? Like, did those make sense for you? Because if you're going to reap the benefits of the card, you want to make sure you're using the benefits that are given to you. Otherwise, you're just paying the fee. So that's part of this whole process when decoding what card makes sense for you. Obviously, travel points and maximizing travel points is key, which we're going to talk about in a moment. But the benefits of the card too, a lot of people overlook them or they think, oh, well, I get all of these benefits and then they don't actually use them, which doesn't make any sense. So keep that in mind. A great resource that you already mentioned is the points guy. And he basically has like a whole profile of every single card with every single benefit and like his opinions on them and pros and cons of each. So go through those and look at all of the options available. And if you're going to pay a fee, make sure you're reaping the benefits, basically, is the point here.
And another resource I really like and one that I've been pulling up here now and that they've taught me if not more than the points guy is a website called One Mile at a Time. It's run by this guy, Ben. Granted, he will talk you into getting any card you read a review on. So take that with a grain of salt. But he really goes into detail on how to use the benefits, the points earning structure, and, you know, just his experience spending on the card.
Cool. Yeah, I love that resource. I'll make sure it's linked in the show notes for anybody who wants to check it out. I want to talk to you now about decoding points. So we've talked about some cards and we've talked about making sure the card you choose aligns with your spending patterns. But now let's get into how do you get the most value out of points? Because I would consider myself a pretty amateur travel card user. Like my travel goals are related to going home, cross-country flights a few times a year, maybe a flight here or there around California, 2 hours, 3 hours, whatever. But I'm not doing any big major trips, similar to how you sort of take big major trips. So how could I get the most value out of the points that I am earning? And what even is the value of a point? Like, is it dollar for dollar? How does that work?
Yeah. So I guess a big thing is you kind of touched on it, but what are your travel goals? Are you saving up for a honeymoon? You know, maybe you're saving up for a honeymoon and you need a lot of hotel points. So you get a Hilton card. Mm-hmm. Maybe you're someone that, you know, you take a ski trip every year and you fly United, and a United card can cover your check bag fees every year. Mm-hmm. So I think understanding your goals and what you want to do with that is crucial. The banks, so, you know, American Express, Chase, Capital One, etc., generally assign a value of 1 cent per point. So you can pay off charges that way. You can book through their travel portals, getting 1 cent per mile. Now, transferring outside to airline partners is where you get real value. So let's take a flight on Air France that costs $3,000 one way, LA to Paris. That's going to be 300,000 points paid through, let's say, Amex.
Yep. You're talking about the Amex portal.
Correct. Amex travel portal, the native Amex travel portal. But Amex is a transfer partner of Air France, and Air France only charges 50,000 Air France points for that same flight. So if you can find it bookable through Air France, you can save yourself a lot of points and get a lot more value thus forth through that.
Got it. So the recommendation there would be, rather than using like the Amex portal or the Chase portal or something, to look at the airline partners and transfer the points, because they'll go further that way.
Much, much further.
Gotcha. I love that tip, because when I first got my Chase Sapphire card, I did book a flight like through the Chase portal. And not only, obviously looking back, was that like kind of a waste of points, but also it makes it a lot harder to cancel or change your reservations because it wasn't booked directly through the airline, which I learned the hard way. So I think that's a really great point. Another question I have for you on the topic of getting the most value out of your points. When we were sitting down for coffee, we talked a little bit about like transfer bonuses. Can you tell me what that is?
Yeah, transfer bonuses are great. Amex and Chase offer them the most. Basically, they'll say this month, Air France is a great example because they always seem to have them going. Amex will say, we'll give you a 20% bonus on your points transferred to Air France. So instead of 1-to-1, which is the general rule of thumb for how your points transfer, it's, I guess it would be 1-to-1.2.
Oh,
yeah. Okay. So that 50,000 point flight might actually only need 38,000. I'm doing rough math, but like you could book that flight for 38,000 Amex points because those 38,000 convert into 50,000 on the Air France
very
side.
Interesting.
That's if you can find the $50,000 flight first.
Gotcha. Yeah. Which actually leads me to my next question, which is finding these flights. So for context, if you're listening, in the time that I've known Benny, he's flown in one of those lay down seats on Emirates to Dubai. He flew to Hong Kong first class, also in like one of those bedroom suites. You went to Australia business class one way.
Japan,
like
this
it's
weekend
insane.
I'm going to Malaysia.
Yeah, this weekend I asked him, oh, do you want to come on a ski trip with me this weekend? And he's like, oh, I'm out of town. And I was like, where are you going? And he's like, Malaysia. So if there's anybody who knows what they're talking about when it comes to finding these sort of flights and getting the value when it's available, it's him. So can you tell me, like, how do you even find these flights? And I'm talking like these big ticket, bigger trip kinds of flights.
Absolutely. Like an international business class, first class type
of flight. Because that's what everybody wants. Like, I want to go in a bedroom suite on a 14-hour flight to Dubai.
And I think one misconception that websites like One Mile at a Time and The Point Sky put out there is they make it seem a little easier than it is. Mm-hmm. I remember first getting my card, being like, now I get my sign-up bonus of whatever it was, 75,000 points. I have enough for a ticket. I start looking for months and months and months. I can't find a single flight to go to the destination I want on the airline I want. And so you have to understand that airlines don't sell these points tickets the same way they sell tickets on cash. Mm-hmm. They have to make that flight bookable with points at that, they call it a saver rate.
Yeah.
So before you transfer any points ever, you have to confirm that the saver rate is available on a flight you want, on a date you want. So that's the first step. The second step is, you know, being flexible. Maybe you want to go to, let's say you want to go to France, but there's no points on Air, you know, you can't get there on Air France, but you can get there on British Airways. Well, I mean, you're getting 10 hours across the ocean. So mm-hmm. flexibility is big there. And then just consistency, you know, I like to look at least, you know, once a day, once I figure out a quick way to check, you know, a couple dates, it takes only 5 minutes. And then, you know, one day you get lucky and there it is.
Yeah.
There are also subscription services. I follow one called Thrifty Traveler Premium. I think it costs about $100 a year. But they send out, you know, big drops. So they'll be like, hey, Air France is bookable across the calendar right now on a saver level out of LA. Like, you know, book this if you were looking for it. And they'll tell you the dates it's available and, you know, how to transfer the points, what banks to use, if there's a transfer bonus.
Gotcha.
So those are really good resources.
Gotcha.
PointMe is another one. It's like Google Flights for redemptions. It's pretty accurate, but sometimes it'll show things mm-hmm. that you go to the airline to book it and it doesn't actually exist, but pretty accurate.
I think a big thing that I'm gleaming from this is like if you want to go on these big trips, there's a huge aspect or layer of flexibility
and
in
research.
Your travel plans. Like obviously the research, you have to sort of know how to transfer the points, which we talked about, but also you have to be flexible in when you're willing to travel and probably like where you're willing to go. Like, do you keep a list of all the places you want to go, or is it sort of like, oh, there's a deal to Malaysia, I'm interested, I'll go?
I have bucket list destinations for sure. I also have bucket list flights where like mm-hmm. I really want to fly that airline, like Emirates in first class. So I'll find somewhere they fly that interests me and then start looking. Mm-hmm. So it really just depends.
Yeah.
There are some places that are restrictively hard to go to.
Like what?
Korea is a great example. Korean Air is no longer a transfer partner. Asiana, their other national carrier, is pretty stingy about releasing availability to their partner airlines. And then if you book it through American Airlines or Delta or United, you're paying their dynamic pricing of $300,000, $400,000 for one way. So that's an example of one where like, that's a we call it a unicorn award. Really, really tough to find, you know, good flights.
Okay, interesting. And also on the topic of this, like these big trips, you are a solo traveler mm-hmm. on a lot of these trips. Do you have any tips for people? I know we didn't talk about this, but do you have any tips for people who like, maybe they're thinking about going on a big solo trip or they haven't flown internationally alone? Do you have any tips for like navigating the anxiety, I guess, that comes along with traveling, especially traveling internationally by yourself?
For sure. Research. I travel alone a lot, but I get anxious too. And I want to know, you know, how long is it going to take me to get to my hotel? How am I getting to my hotel? What time is the train leave to get to my hotel? Like I map out every minute and every step of the travel process so that I know it's just going through the motion once I'm there. Staying in a hostel is a great way to meet people because mm-hmm. solo travel can be lonely. And then also going on like tours when you're at a place like a food tour, you'll meet people on a food tour, a bar crawl. That kind of thing where you're just meeting people who are doing the same type of activities.
Yeah. Yeah. You've really opened my mind to like solo traveling because it would never occur to me to like fly to Hong Kong alone. But I feel like watching you do that is like, it's very admirable because it takes courage to go on a solo trip, but also to like go on a solo trip to such a foreign, faraway place.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like that's very scary.
It's I research a lot and I plan meticulously what I'm going to do, when I'm going to do it, so that I know, okay, I'm going to have fun.
Yeah.
All of these things I've planned are going to be fun. Even if I'm alone, I'll still be enjoying myself.
Yeah. Yeah. I love those tips. I think it's really helpful. Let's talk too a little bit about some advanced cards. So I know we touched on like Amex cards and stuff and how to get the most out of your points. But do you have any extra tips for like, let's say somebody has a Chase Sapphire Preferred and now they've signed up for the Amex Platinum. Do they need another card? And if they were to open another card, like what's the benefit? Because I know you have a lot of cards. So like, what is the benefit of having multiple travel cards? Are there crossover benefits? Can you combine all of those points? How do you navigate that?
Yeah, that's a great, great question. So people often see that I have an Amex Platinum and an Amex Gold and think like, why would you do that? Mm-hmm. But I can maximize my value out of both of those and essentially have an effective $0 annual fee on both cards. Now, if I were to get the Chase Sapphire Reserve, which is their premium travel card, there's a lot of crossover benefits with the Platinum, where I already get, let's say, the $189 credit for a clear membership. Mm-hmm. I don't need that twice, so that's not really helping me save off the annual fee on the Reserve. So that's not a card I carry, nor will I ever carry, because to me, if I can't get the annual fee effectively down to under $100, it's not something I'll entertain, because before you know it, you're throwing money at a card that's getting you very little in return.
Yeah, good point. So what would you say, in your opinion, I don't want to say better, but like, what are the big differentiators between going the Chase route versus going the Amex route? Because I know that Amex, I feel like, is considered to be the more premium version mm-hmm. of travel cards. Is that just, does Amex have more travel partners? Like, do they just offer more rewards to cardholders? Like, how do you differentiate?
Yeah, they're definitely thought of as the premium currency, if you will, in mm-hmm. points. They have the most transfer partners. They have the most transfer bonuses. Of a card like a Platinum or a Gold card has a lot of purchase protection built into it that hopefully we never need to use. Mm-hmm. But if you ever do need to use it, they're just very, very solid company. Chase is, I would say, right behind them. A few less travel partners, a little less transfer bonuses, but still like a very good currency. Capital One is another one that has a lot of partners that Chase and Amex don't have.
Oh, interesting.
Well, maybe one or two, but still, that's a lot when you're talking having 10 to 15 partners.
Do you think, or do you see that there's a lot of crossover in travel partners between Chase and Amex?
Okay. So one strategy I've taken up lately is I now have 9 cards across pretty much all the currencies. Michaela laughs as I say that. But I book, like, Emirates is really expensive to book. Even the cheapest way, you're talking 160,000 to 180,000 points and $1,000 in taxes and fees, which we can talk about.
Let's talk about that. Finish your thought.
I'm almost done with it. Fees. So instead of taking all 160,000 from my Amex bank of points, I'll split that up between Amex, Capital One, and Chase because they all transfer. And now I'm only taking, 50,000, 60,000 out of each bank.
Oh, that's really interesting. So like you have an Amex card, you have a Chase card, a Capital One card, and they all transfer to Emirates, for example. Mm-hmm. You could pull 20,000 points from each to collect and 60. Basically transfer them all to Emirates and use those to collect or to book the flight.
Yeah. And most transfers are instantaneous, but do keep in mind that sometimes it'll take some time for points to transfer. So do that research before making any transfers, because you don't want to make a transfer, the points take 24 hours to get there, and now the flight's gone.
So that's a really good point.
Yeah.
Because I would have never thought about that.
Every time I make any transfer, I'll cross-check a couple places to see how long they're saying transfers take. And it's usually instantaneous.
Yeah. The overarching theme, if you aren't getting it, is make sure you're doing your research before you move or book anything. Because once you move the car or move the points from the card to a travel partner, you can't transfer them back.
Correct. There are like literally specific cases where a bank will let you transfer back, and like they happen like once every 5 years. Yeah. So just consider a transfer permanent.
Really good, really good info. Okay, let's circle back to taxes and fees, because this was another thing we talked about that blew my mind. You can book a trip with points, but you're going to pay more taxes and fees depending on the airline and the destination, correct?
Correct. So Emirates has the highest, but England as a country and London Heathrow Airport specifically impose taxes and fees on premium travelers. So even booking with points, let's say you're flying British Airways.
First class.
Or let's take business class because I know the rate off the top of my head. If you were to book that through American Airlines, if you had their points, it's 57,500. Great. That's pretty good for a 10-hour flight. But there's $754 in taxes and fees one way on that flight.
That's crazy.
And do that round trip, you're almost, you know, you're $1,500 outside of your points. Mm-hmm. So that's something to consider.
And that's for premium travel. So like, let's say you used points to book an economy seat.
There would be lower taxes and fees, but you're never going to see anything, particularly in the U.S., for under $5.60, which is the TSA tax. So there's always going to be some level of taxes and fees. It just depends on the destination and the airline.
Yeah, that's so fascinating to me because in my brain, I think about points. I'm like, oh, I'm getting a free flight, which I am technically getting a free flight. But the taxes and fees, the international taxes and fees were shocking to me, but the premium taxes and fees were also really surprising.
Yeah.
You don't think about that.
Yeah, but they show it to you when you're booking it.
Yeah.
So they don't hide it from you. But like I'm doing that Air France flight, for example, that we talked about in March. And it's $200 that way in taxes and fees.
Yeah.
And then on the way back, I'm flying directly from England and it's $700 in taxes and fees.
Which is crazy.
Which is like still, you're only paying, only, I say in air quotes, because you're also paying the points, but you're only paying $700 for 10, you know, what would be a $5,000 or $6,000 flight. So you're still getting great value, but it's not free like we think of.
Yeah, that's a really good point. Okay, I want to talk to you a little bit about some of the trips you've done.
Sure.
Because I feel like that's fascinating, and it also like exemplifies how skilled you are in this world. So what would you say was your favorite business class experience?
Ooh, I'm going to one-up you and go first class. And
Actually, what's the distinction between business and first class? Because to me, they're the same, but to you, they're different.
Sure. When we're talking internationally, not all airlines offer what's considered international first class. But first class, you're getting a higher level of service, nicer food, let's say caviar, for example, a bigger seat. On an airline like Emirates, the bathroom has a shower in it, versus on business class on Emirates, you still have a lie-flat seat with a lot of space and really good food, but the level of service and the quality of the food and beverage is a little lower compared to what it is.
So first class is the most premium.
That's the cream of the crop.
Gotcha. Okay.
But business class is still extremely comfortable in almost all cases and perfectly adequate for no matter how long of a flight you're taking.
Okay. So what's your favorite business or first class experience?
I would say for first, like I said, it was Emirates. Mm-hmm. I flew them out of LA. That was my most expensive redemption by far.
How many points?
$183,000 and $1,000 in taxes and fees, both of which I did not do without it hurting a little, you know, like that was more than I ever want to spend, but worth every penny.
Was that 183,000 points round trip or one way?
One way.
So that's another thing that we should call out is usually these big premium flights that you book, the deal is on a one way ticket. So you have to figure out if you have enough points to book the same level on the way back or if you'll just fly economy.
Yes,
right?
Correct. And I have some friends who are starting to get into it and asking me about this. And my advice, if you can only do one way, is to do it on the way back. So you have something to look forward to at the end of the trip.
That's really smart.
And if you're like flying, let's say Emirates, you're flying out of Dubai, which is their home airport where they have their nicest lounges and ground service. So, you know, it's a better experience.
So what was your favorite part about that experience? Because that was when you had like a bed, not just a lie flat seat, right?
Yeah. I think one of the things, I kind of did a lot of research, so I knew what to expect and watched a lot of reviews. One of the things that was really cool is I had a layover there. And when I walked off the plane, there was a man standing there with an iPad with my name on it. And he walked me to my own golf cart that drove me for 10 minutes through the airport right to the front door of the lounge. And I was like, oh my God, like this is I've never had this or even seen this. Like,
it's a very luxury experience.
Like, I don't even have to walk with these people.
Yeah. Was the bed actually comfortable?
Very.
And is the food good?
Delicious.
Yeah.
And they have top shelf booze. So if you like to drink, Emirates is a good one. They have a bar on board. back to your question, favorite business class experience would be Singapore Airlines.
Okay.
The seats are unique, and some people find them uncomfortable. I don't. But their food is on par with first class airlines, and their service is incredible. Like, they'll put slippers on your feet for you. Like, it's crazy. Wow.
Yeah, whenever I think about flying, because I've only ever flown first class, like in a lie down seat one time, mm-hmm. and I paid for it. Like, mm-hmm. I didn't use really points. And it was on a transcontinental flight. So sure. It wasn't international. And I honestly like didn't really like it because in my brain I was thinking, oh, this is a lie flat seat that's going to be comfortable. But like, it's still just an airplane seat that reclines all the way. So like, it's not padded. But I feel like on the bigger international flights, they give you like mattress pads and like make it more comfortable.
Yeah, yeah. And I think that to me is truly the biggest physical distinction between business and first. Even international business, the seat is still, you know, reclining into a bed, and it's still, you know, a seat that's now been made flat. And they're very comfortable and obviously more comfortable than coach.
Well, yeah.
But it's not going to feel like a bed. With first class, they often feel like a bed, and in the case of like Etihad, which I flew this past fall, there's a separate bed from your seat. So that's like actually a bed that you're sleeping on.
Yeah, that's crazy to me. I like can't comprehend sleeping in a real bed on a plane.
It's mind-blowing. It changes your whole... You want your flights to be longer.
Yeah, how many hours was that flight?
Only 6.5. And oh. If they doubled it, I would have still wanted to
stay
on longer.
Well, yeah, because I also feel like if I'm going to fly like a really premium ticket, I want the flight to be 12 hours because I want to be able to experience sleeping. And then I also want to be able to experience like being awake and taking advantage of all of those benefits.
So when I did my Emirates flight, I could have flown out of New York, but that's like four hours shorter than flying out of LA. Mm-hmm. So I was like, spend a few days in LA before and then take a longer flight. And I was like, my family's like, you purposefully booked a longer flight? And I was like, absolutely.
Well, if you're going to spend the points or the money, like, I feel like you want to experience the flight.
Yeah.
Like, and the flight is honestly cooler than the trip sometimes.
And, like, I'll do research on, like, what lounges are there and what I have access to. And I'm like, oh, I can go to I'll go to the airport 6 hours early because the lounge has amazing food and views, and you can get a massage in some lounges. Like, you should maximize these. I call them experiences.
Yeah. On the topic of lounges, because that's a whole part of this experience that we didn't even talk about. Like, if you do fly a premium trip, you do get access to lounges depending on the airline, correct? And like where mm-hmm. you're flying out of.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, airlines are part of alliances most often. So there's three major ones, One World, Star Alliance, and SkyTeam. I am a One World flyer because I fly American Airlines. So when you're on a partner airline, you can go to, you know, the American Airlines lounge or mm-hmm. flying American Airlines out of Sydney. They partner with the National Airline of Australia, Qantas. So you can use their lounges in Australia. And like same thing with domestically. A lot of the premium airline credit cards give you lounge access.
Yeah.
So, like I mentioned, I fly American Airlines. I have their most premium credit card because even when I don't get upgraded, you know, I book economy when I fly domestically.
Yeah.
I could still go to the lounge, do some work, eat, take a shower if I'm at the end of my work day, and really sort of have a nicer airport experience.
Yeah, I have the United mileage card. Mm-hmm. I don't have the most premium version, but ever since I moved out to California, I'm realizing like I fly United a lot, specifically for going skiing, and like United flies direct into Boston. So I book United when I can, and I get 2 lounge passes a year, which like isn't that much, but it's enough for the times where I'm stuck at the airport or whatever. And the times that I've gone into the lounge have obviously been significantly better than the times where I'm just sitting at the gate. But I'm curious, like, do you think it's worth it to build status with an airline, to get that lounge access? Does it make a difference? Are there certain cards you can have where you always get lounge access? Because I know that those rules started to change recently.
Delta's the one that rolled back the lounge access. They suffered from the most overcrowding. My American Airlines city executive card has unlimited access to their domestic lounges. Mm-hmm. But... yeah, I think building status with an airline, it really just depends on your spending power, how much you're going to fly, and is it really worth it? Because for most people, even the entry-level status is an amount of money that they're not realistically going to spend on travel for the year. I think entry level at American is $4,000 or $6,000. That's a lot of money. Mm-hmm. So if you fly for work, absolutely, 100%. Pick an airline, stick with them. For me, you know, I travel a lot. Now being back in LA and not pretending to be bi-coastal so much, I'll be traveling less. But that's kind of how I got my status with American. And there are great benefits to it. If I fly coach out of, say, Hong Kong on a partner airline of the home airline Cathay Pacific, I can go to their first class lounge and get a massage, you know, premium champagne, and a room with a bed. Okay. And that's on a coach ticket because I was loyal to their partner.
Interesting. So
if you can swing it, absolutely.
Okay, good to know. Because, yeah, I've been trying to build status with United, but, like, I, to your point, I'm not spending $6,000 a year basically on United flights.
And like, that level of status gets you very little. Like, almost, you could get the same perks getting a nice United card that offers, you know, whatever, group four boarding and a free checked bag.
True.
Like, those are the same benefits. Yeah. Without spending the $6,000.
I've learned, yeah, the benefits that I care about with flying are I want to be in like the first few boarding groups. So I tend to book exit row seats because you can always board first so that I don't have to worry about my bag getting put in a spot behind my seat. That happened to me one time. It was a traumatizing experience. Mm-hmm. It will never happen to me again. The other thing is like checked bags when I ski. So when I fly United, because I have the card, then I don't have to pay to check my bag both ways, which is $45 each way.
Yeah, that could pay for your card right there.
Yeah, that pays one trip that pays for my card. This year I'm doing three.
There you go.
So, you know, yeah, that pays for that. But then the other thing too is now I prioritize, like I'll pay extra money to buy the seat that I want so that I either get priority boarding or I'm like comfortable on the plane.
Yeah.
Which I guess sometimes if you have status, you can get automatic upgrades, but I have not figured out how to do that.
Yeah, so that's a big benefit of status. Even entry-level status, you get like the extra legroom economy seats. Yeah. Each airline has a different name for it. So for me, I always fly exit row because I get it for free. And if I... I'm spoiled now, so if I'm not on an airline with status, oftentimes in my brain I'll justify spending, you know, the $75 for the exit row. If it's a, you know, 7-hour flight to Europe, I'm like, ah, I'll regret this the second I get on board, you know?
Okay, I want to wrap up with a couple of, like, quick tips to maximize points, because a discovery that you put me on was using Rakuten to get points. I did not know you could do that. Mm-hmm. So do you have any like quick tips for people? Because you have mentioned like your flight to Dubai was 183,000 points. And I think a big barrier a lot of people face is like, how the hell do I get that many points?
Right. I mean, that's
how do
that's
you spend
the extreme.
That much to get that many points?
Yes.
But you're not spending that amount of money. You're getting the points in a variety of different ways.
That's
so
correct.
What are your tips to like accumulate enough points to actually be able to book these flights?
Yeah, I mean, I think the biggest thing is once you understand your spending patterns, picking something that maximizes rewards through those spending patterns. So like I said, for most people, including myself, outside of rent, that's food, dining, and groceries. Mm-hmm. That also includes, you know, buying drinks at a bar often counts as, you know, being in a restaurant. So the Amex Gold gets 4X. You know, every time you swipe, you're earning 4 times the amount of points you would if you were earning a card with 1X. Mm-hmm. Sign-up bonuses is another huge one. Timing a sign-up bonus. I just referred a friend, and the sign-up bonus was, I think, 30,000 points higher than it normally is. So you got a free 30,000. And then going back to Rakuten, which is again how we got started on this.
Yeah.
When you online shop, always do it either through an airline portal or Rakuten. And Rakuten can pay out instead of in dollars in Amex points. Mm-hmm. You link your accounts and they'll often have multipliers going. So for example, I sent you that screenshot from LifeLock. It was 95X on LifeLock. So if you get the most premium LifeLock year subscription, I think it was $395, you know, you're earning over 30,000 points, you know, on something that maybe you were in the market for or you weren't in the market for, and like, ah, this would be nice to have, and it'll get me halfway to, you know, a free flight.
Yeah, that's crazy. That's what I didn't realize. The Rakuten thing, I feel like, is a big game changer, because Rakuten has made a big difference for me in terms of accumulating cash back. And like, I love getting my quarterly cash back checks. That's basically like the money I use on shopping or anything, any purchases I've been putting off. But I'm going to switch to doing points because I'm doing a lot of flying this year. So mm-hmm. I'm like, that's such a good idea. How do I do that? Is it just a setting?
Yeah, you go to, I don't have internet right now, but you go to the settings where how you want to get paid.
Okay.
And there's an option to add and link your Amex account and get paid in membership rewards. It pays out quarterly, I believe.
Okay, that's fine. Yeah, that's how it all works. You get like quarterly checks, or I would imagine the quarterly points payout. Interesting. Okay, for everybody listening, I have a Rakuten link in the show notes always, so you should check that out. Cool. This was so helpful. Thank you so much for coming on.
Of course.
And if you have questions, I'll make sure that Benny's Instagram handle is in the show notes, or you can just send me a DM or an email and reach out to me, and I will relay the question and get back to you. So yeah, thank you so much for coming on. This was very helpful.
Absolutely. It was fun talking about you.